So my wife is also an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church. We met in seminary. She was a student pastor, and I very soon afterwards became a student pastor as well. And so our schedules were pretty hectic. And there was a lot that you had to cram in one day, including eating in the midst of everything else that you were doing. And so my wife and I kind of have this running joke that anytime we have a meal together in the midst of the next thing that we have to go through, we have to go into what we call seminary eating, which is basically just, you know, chowing down as quickly as you can, not really tasting it, you know, swallowing more than chewing because you got to get to the next thing. And we all probably know what that is like, no matter you know, what our lifestyle is, that some days you just feel like you have to kind of wolf stuff down and, you know, get it all done in one bite because you got to go to the next thing. And I remember, you know, we would have conversations every once in a while saying, you know, well, when we graduate, things will slow down. And then it was, well, after I get ordained, things will slow down. And then it was, well, once our son gets a little bit older, and then when, and when, and when. But of course, as we all know, we rush through meals as we rush through life. Because there's just that next thing that we have to get to, and we don't really have time for this thing that we call eating. Some of you may have watched Mad Men. It was a TV show about an ad agency in the 60s. And every so often, they would have to pitch this idea to the account, to the company that they were working with. And one episode was around Burger Chef. A Burger Chef was an actual place. It was a fast food chain in the 50s and 60s. And so when their agency lands Burger Chef, they're pitching their idea of, you know, how do you market fast food, especially in the 60s when it's not as popular as it is today. And so they decide to go with the angle of that Burger Chef can be the place where you have your family meal, that you can get away from all the distractions and all the hubbub and, you know, just sit down together at a table. And so they decide that as they're pitching this idea, they need to go out and actually have interviews, you know, real stories of people and families coming together and having that kind of experience. And what they find out is as they're coming there and talking with folks, everybody is just like, you know, I'm just here because it's quick. I'm here because it's easy. I'm here because I burned the meatloaf or whatever it is. You know, I just need something fast. And so the more they hear this, of course, the more they realize that Burger Chef is not at all designed for what they hope that it would be. And they're kind of sitting at this table themselves about to have their own fast food meal. And one of them says, you know, whatever happened to people just sitting down together at a table and sharing a meal? And again, this was back in the 60s. So as Junius Dotson is writing about this in this chapter, Eat Something, he quotes another pastor from Washington, Dr. Bob Moorhead, who at one point said, "We have learned how to make a living, but not a life." And so for the scripture story that attaches to this, Junius remembers Elijah. Now, this is the part of the story where we might know the more familiar passage of God being heard not in the wind or the fire or the earthquake, but in the silence. And this is the part that kind of comes after that. So Elijah hears his call from God, and he steps up, and he performs the way that he's supposed to. But now he has to deal with the consequences of what he has done, standing up to an entire nation. Because now he's done what God has told him to do, but now, of course, as we all know, now he's got people mad at him for doing it. And this is where the story leads to this morning. Then Elijah lay down under the broom tree and fell asleep. And suddenly an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked, and there at his head was a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. He ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came a second time, touched him, and said, "Get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you." Elijah got up, ate and drank. Then he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. At that place he came to a cave and spent the night there. So a lot of eating and a lot of resting. Junius writes, "We see a man who, in the literal sense, is emotionally, spiritually, and physically drained. The irony of the story is that Elijah had just experienced the greatest success of his life. And so we may remember this story very well. Maybe we've even lived it. Maybe not necessarily Elijah's story, but maybe our own version, where we press on, right? We keep going. We keep pushing ourselves. We keep streamlining. We keep bearing down and pushing and pushing and pushing until we finally achieve that success. I know just in my success of moving to a new house this weekend, I'm the kind of person, like, I want to start and I want to get it done. I don't want to take breaks, because if I take a break, then I'm not going to get up and do it. So I just push and push and push until I can't go anymore or until it's finished. And I'm realizing the older I get, the harder that is. But it's that mindset that we have, right? We've just got to push through it. And then finally we get there. And then what? I mean, what have we traded our time, our energy, our relationships? What have we traded our souls for? At one point in this pitch in Mad Men, one of the ad agencies says, "We are starving, and not just for food." Elijah, in this story, stands up against an entire nation, the entire nation of Israel, for worshiping a false god. And he calls them out on it, and he stands up to the royal powers, right? Queen Jezebel, King Ahab, and he wins. He gets them to stop. But of course, now he has to run from those very powers that he has been standing up to. He's running for his life, and he keeps going, and he keeps going, and he keeps going, until finally he reaches this mountain, and he just confesses to God, "Just let me die here. I can't keep going." Someone put it this way: the cold, hard fact of human existence is that we find ourselves adrift in an indifferent, even hostile universe, shouldered with the added burden of having to summon the strength to continue on nonetheless. And maybe we have not experienced that as powerfully as we have the last year and a half. I've just got to keep going. I've just got to keep going. Until one day we just say, "I can't do it anymore." I mean, that led to Junius Dotson writing this whole book, right? Standing in front of a congregation, just like any other day, and collapsing. And the next thing he knows, he's sitting in an ambulance saying, "You're exhausted." And of course, what he says in this chapter, as he says in a lot of the chapters, is as a people, and even in our context as a church, this is one of the truths that we do not like to admit. We are exhausted. And so he writes about how this is one of the truths that we don't admit, and that for some reason we are afraid to do so. I mean, why is this, especially as a church, why are we afraid to admit this particular weakness? This weakness, and is it even really a weakness? Is that why we're afraid, that we don't want to admit that we actually have an energy limit or a physical limit or even a spiritual one? I mean, sometimes we'll say, you know, we're tired, you know, we're burned out, we're exhausted, but it's because we've done so much stuff, right? It's because we've made so many achievements, we've had great success, and we've produced something. That's why we're so tired. We're so tired because we're so successful. Instead of just saying, "I'm just done." Are we afraid of the disappointment that we might see in the person that we confess this to say that we actually have a limit, that we're actually tired, that we're burned out, that we're exhausted? I mean, as Christians, are we afraid of disappointing God? We've all heard the remark, maybe we've even used it before, about inviting someone to church, or, you know, so-and-so won't come to church, and they say, "Well, you know, if I showed up, the roof would cave in." And sometimes we might use that statement, that joke, as a way of masking our true fear, which is, "I don't think God's really interested in me." And And God's answer to all of this, to Elijah, to us in those moments of weakness, of exhaustion, of fear, rest. Eat. And that might sound so simple, right? In fact, it may even sound like, you know, God is just kind of brushing us away. You know, we all may have that relative who, you know, we kind of bare our soul to or just say the challenge, and their answer is, you know, have some cake. And we might think that it's really trivial, but if it's really good cake, that might be exactly what we needed. You know, there's that great scene in Spider-Man 2 when Peter Parker is struggling to figure out, you know, should I be Peter? Should I be Spider-Man? Can I not just have what I want? And his neighbor knocks on the door and she says, would you like a piece of chocolate cake? It's not trivial. You know why that happens? It's a sacrament. Food is sacred. And if that doesn't work for you, then maybe this will. So as Christians, we're supposed to obey God, right? God commands us to rest. It's the fourth commandment. Not only is it the fourth commandment, but it's the biggest one. Right? Most of the commandments are one-liners, right? You know, don't lie, don't steal, don't kill. Not the fourth one. Here's what it says. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or female slaves, your livestock or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested. God rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Why so much language in that particular commandment? Maybe it's because these commandments are coming to an entire nation, community of people who were slaves, whose entire existence was solely for the purpose of working for someone else, to the point where their humanity had not been considered, for most of them, their entire lives. And then here comes Moses and a few other leaders, literally leading them out of this former life and helping them to not just find a new place, but a new life, a new way of being. And one of them is a reminder that we are not workers. We are humans. And our lives and our humanity are not dependent on what it is that we can do, but who it is that we are. Who it is God has created us to be. See, the Sabbath rest is to reconnect with God and remember who we are. And that's why eating is a sacrament. Resting, eating, taking those bites reminds us who we are. You remember that scene in Ratatouille when the food critic Anton Ego takes that first bite? And instantly he has that flashback of himself as a child. He's got that scraped knee, his bike is broken, and his mom's standing over the kitchen stove cooking that pot of ratatouille. And he sits down and he takes that bite and everything's fine. Because in the sacrament of that bite, he remembers. He remembers who he is. See, eating is not just about sustaining our bodies. It's about sustaining our souls. We all know eating is not just about the body. It's why we're going to have a back-to-school bash. Because it is about the fellowship. It is about the connection. It is about the experience. It is about the relationship. It is about the love. I mean, think about your favorite meals. and the particular times that you need to have them, right? Maybe it's just once a year. Maybe it's at a certain holiday, or maybe it's when you visit a certain loved one. That food, that meal, the act of eating it has to be a part of that experience each and every time. I mean, why are my grandmother's cookies the best cookies in the world? Because they are. Because it's not just the cookie. It is everything that is embodied in that that I'm able to partake of because she gave it to me. That's why they're the best. It's not just about our bodies. We need to eat something for our souls. Because the love that is embodied in the sacrament of that meal is truly what is feeding us. But it doesn't stop there. It's important for us to rest, and it's important for us to eat, but there's a reason and there's a purpose for doing it. So the part of the story that I didn't read with Elijah is that when Elijah goes to Mount Horeb and he stays there for a time, he hears this voice. He hears God saying, "What are you doing here?" Elijah is meant to eat and to rest so that he can go back to the people and continue to be the prophet that God has called and equipped and empowered him, fed him to be. So in these stories, the purpose of the cave is very mythological, right? The cave is all about going into this place and sort of discovering, rediscovering, remembering who you are, seeing yourself for who you truly are. And then, of course, as you walk out, you come out as that person, right? It's a rite of initiation. We need that rest and to go to whatever cave it is that we need to go so we might rest, disconnect, be fed, receive what it is that we need to receive so that we can go out and give to others. Not only that, sometimes we have to leave things at the cave. James Baldwin, I think, said it best when he wrote in his book, The Fire Next Time, "I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hates so stubbornly is because they sense once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with the pain." Might that be what we are seeing in this season today? We don't stay in the cave. We stay as long as we need until we discover, and then we come out fed, nourished, energized, so that we might go and do the work God has called us to do. As we were putting together this series a few months ago when Pastor Nikki came on board, this was her question for this theme. What would change in our lives? What would change with our families, our church? What would change with the world if we just ate something? It's one of the reasons we have a food drive. It's also one of the reasons we've gone back to having that food drive in the first Sunday of the month instead of the second, because it ties into Communion Sunday. Now, of course, at our service, we have communion every week. But for us as an entire congregation, we get to see and experience, or at least know, that not only are we all fed as a congregation, but we are then empowered to go out and to feed others. And what better way than the food drive that not only we have been doing for so long, but especially in this season of the pandemic, how it is that you all have responded so faithfully every single month. And if you don't believe me, ask Forrest, because he's the one that takes the food to those who are hungry, because you bring it here first. Because you know, you're not just feeding bodies, you're feeding souls. So one of the reasons that we'll have the back to school bash later today. I mean, yeah, we'll be fed, it'll feed our bodies, but it's also going to feed our souls. So where is the cave that we find ourselves today? Where is the place where we need to go and we just simply need to rest, to recharge, and just eat something, and to do it as a sacrament? Because as Jesus reminds us in the Gospel of John, that that incredibly powerful and even kind of confusing chapter when Jesus feeds the 5,000, and then they come back the next day and they're saying, you know, give us this bread, give it to us again, give it to us every day. And he says, it's me. I am the bread. I mean, what you ate yesterday, that just lasts for a finite time. But with me, it lasts forever. So a few months ago, when we were putting this service back together, we actually got in touch with a lot of you and just kind of asked, you know, if we made some changes, would that be okay? And when Jeremy and I got back in touch with each other, we realized that everybody had pretty much told us two things. As long as you don't get rid of these guys, and they keep singing, and as long as you keep communion every week, nothing else matters. We'll go where you tell us to go. We'll sit where you tell us to sit. Music and communion. Because you know how important it is. And again, it's not the literal food. It's not that. It's the sacrament of being able to do so as a community and realizing the holy power that comes in the transformation, not just of the food itself, but the transformation that we experience, but also that calling to go out and be that very which has fed us. So go and eat something. I wish we didn't have a pandemic because I would have brought donuts and, you know, food and stuff. We could have just had a love feast right here, but unfortunately, that's not the safest thing. But wherever it is that you go, before you do anything else, just go eat something. And in the midst of that, remember that you are participating in a sacrament, but then go and be that sacrament to a world that is hungry and thirsty and needing to be reminded of who they are and that they too are loved. And may we go in peace. Amen.